Hello and welcome to Kicking Tires. My name is Jimmy.
And I'm Justin.
And today is July 6th, and we missed a week, but we're back. And we have some exciting news from the past 2 weeks to share with you. Honestly, there has been too much, so you're not missing out that much. But we do have a few things to kind of go over. So let's start it off with Hyundai. They release a brand new vehicle, the Ioniq 6, which I don't know about it. I don't think it's the prettiest, but I think it's different enough to be weird.
It's another one of these turtle shaped sedan coupe hatchbacky kind of cars. Actually, it looks like it's a sedan, right? Or
Yeah, it's more sedan than that
like the
kind
rear
of that
window
coupe.
doesn't open from
Yeah,
what I can tell.
and it's higher
It's
as
got a
well.
really weird shape. It's very hard to describe. And it's like you said prior to the show, it's like someone describing like a 911 or a new Beetle, the rear, but poorly describe and making you draw it. It's like a game of charades or whatever it's called. It looks like it's going backwards because the front is higher up than the back, visually at least. Like the you can tell because the belt line molding on the front door is higher up than it is behind the C pillar.
Yeah,
So
it
visually, the
slopes
car
down.
slopes backwards and not in like a Bugatti, 1950s aesthetic kind of way. It's just ugly. It's not a the EV market is huge, right? Everyone wants to break into this market and really grab a chunk of market share. And I don't know how this is going to compete with cars like the i4, the Model 3, because it's such an oddball of a
Yeah.
design. The interior is nice.
Interior is pretty nice. Interior is pretty cohesive with like the Hyundai brand. It looks your typical Hyundai kind of interior,
Yeah, this
but
is
the
like think
exterior.
first gen Prius, right? Like not a very like it's not a bad car by any means, but it's really overshadowed by how ugly it is. It's like the car is irrelevant. It took the second gen Prius to make it relevant, right?
Oh, I
Like
just had to Google up the first gen Prius. I don't even remember it.
it's the one that looks like an Echo but worse. Like without any of the cute charm, it's
Every
just
single one of them you saw was that silvery green color.
And it's like it's very similar basis, but they messed it up so bad with the styling that it just couldn't take off. And then
So I'll tell you what I do like about the Ioniq 6 though. There are some like cues that I do like. The headlight looks pretty cool. I like the look of that. And the tail light also looks pretty cool. The tail light is very reminiscent of the Ioniq 5. It's very similar to that. You get those blocky kind of looks to it. But it's kind of like a 911 where it's kind of this like entire tail light bar that goes across the rear. And you have the third brake light on that spoiler. It's kind of like a 911 turbo, where generally that's exactly where they have it. So it's very different in its shape. What I'm not a big fan of on the back end, because I'm a big fan of tail light design. But the part that's a little weird to me is the reflectors. The reflectors are vertical, and they're below like where the bumper would be. So in a way, it looks like, you know how like early 90s, 80s type European Porsches, they have like the bumper molding to have that like 5 mile per hour crash test rating. That's what it reminds me of. The reflector is that 5 mile per hour bumper molding. So it doesn't look like it
I
protrudes
mean,
out,
there's a
but
lot that's wrong with this rear styling. Like the rear, it has like an upper deck kind of thing. So terrible for practicality wise. Like you lose a good portion of your trunk to this styling element that frankly is not very attractive. You know, they're gonna argue aerodynamics, I know it, but
yeah, I'm sure if you look at the if we look at the numbers, the
drag coefficient must be amazing, but
yeah,
it's a weird design because even when you go to the that's super low, but even when you go to the front, right, like they have this the black band that wraps across and it just looks cheap, like it looks like a subcompact car designed to be banged up, so they put that black strip there. You could have body colored that if you do want it, but it feels a little bit Citroen from like 2003. I want to say there's like that quirkiness to it, but we're over that now. And this is Hyundai not bringing a very captivating design to the table.
I remember during the media launch, they were saying how it's kind of like streamliner kind of look. If you ever Google streamliner, you'll see like it's generally like more like blocky on the front end, and then it kind of goes down towards the rear. That's like kind of the teardrop kind of. Yeah, that's what they're trying to do here, but it's not blocky enough on the front. It's still quite curvaceous on the front, but it does drop in the back. So it's not full streamliner. Yes, it has some of that like look, but it's not enough of that look. So it's kind of like in the middle. It's almost like, think Audi TT, except stretched longer. Like
only the back stretched longer.
Yeah.
Actually, we were talking about it last week, but it kind of reminds me of that very ugly Pagani.
How they
stretch up the Cotalunga Pagani Huayra. So that one had a stretched out long tail, which, you know, the front is kind of more normal proportions, and then they just force like a teardrop to the rear. And I get it on a concept car to do something like this, but if this is a production ready model,
it's production.
I'm worried for the sales figures, you know.
Well, I mean,
who it's being built for,
like all Hyundais, the pricing is going to be amazing. And in this kind of day and age, a lot of people, they shop around for the best price more than anything else. So
I mean, it's got to meet people's needs, which, you know, hopefully the interior space is good. The trunk space doesn't look like it's going to be very practical.
Well, with the naming convention, this being the 6, it should be slightly higher priced than the 5 as well, and should have better materials inside than the 5. Hoping. So we'll see. We'll see exactly what happens, but not a big fan of it. From the press photos.
The worst thing is that you have so much momentum with your 5. The Ioniq 5 is a pretty significant car, I would say, for this year. And they should be building on top of that. And this just feels like this is such a risky move that it's like, I don't think this is what people want. And all that momentum just, you know, it's like a brick wall.
Well, they'll still sell plenty of the Ioniqs. That car is doing very, very well in that EV market right now. So I don't think it's going to be bad for the brand as a whole.
Yeah.
Like you said, it will lose some momentum, but I think the Ioniq 5 should carry it through.
Yeah. No, they should be taking advantage of that, right? Like, you know, the Model 3 did very well. You know, we built a sedan, affordable sedan, that did very well, so we'll do a Model Y. It's going to be 10-20 grand higher. It's going to have a little bit more stuff. It's going to be a little bit bigger, and so you build on that momentum. But this is like a product so in left field that it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, you say it's in left field, but Volkswagen is like, hey, you know what, we'll do something very similar. Which is our next topic here, is the ID Aero concept car. So this is a concept, and it is a sedan. And it's very similar to the Ioniq 6 in terms of just the way that it looks in general. But it's much more elegant.
It's way nicer. It's more similar to like the Arteon. And yeah, I see some Mercedes EQ styling with the roof, the blacked out roof.
Well, the roof line in this is very different than in the IDs or the Ioniq 6. So the roof line goes all the way to the rear. So it is like hatchy in terms of its look rather than more sedan. But there's still a little bit of a sedan lip on the rear.
Yeah, so, I mean, think like the Arteon or the A7 shape, but a little bit more rounded out in the back. You know, for better aero, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a great looking car. I'm sure.
But drag the coefficient biggest... of 0.23. So, but,
see, worse.
Exactly.
Thing is, I don't think the biggest problem with Volkswagen right now isn't their ID line. They got some great products coming up. I mean, we don't get the ID3 here in North America because hatchbacks don't sell, maybe, according to Volkswagen anyways. So they brought out the ID4.
Not according to their GTI, but...
Yeah. I don't understand why we don't get the ID3. Anyways, we get the ID4. The ID Buzz is coming. There's the ID4 GTX that's supposed to be coming. But all this is coming. The issue with Volkswagen right now isn't, you know, just the amount of cars. It's just you can't get any of them, and because they're built in Germany, and because of, you know, the issues that's currently going on there, they can't build any of these cars. So they can put out as many concept cars as they really want, but in the hands of a buyer, no one's buying these ID4. I mean, I've seen them on the road, but definitely not as much as even Ioniq 5s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. So the press release does talk about a few important things, which I think makes this car pretty compelling. Over 600 kilometers of range, right? And VW's been delivering on their range estimates, I think. And price point-wise, so you're like, okay, over 600 kilometers of range. Well, that's on WLTP cycle. But it's still a lot of range.
It should be like 5/8 of that.
It's still a decent amount of range for what is going to be projected around a $35,000-$40,000 USD price point. So it's relatively affordable, or should be when it does come out. And it's probably, you know, if they're saying late 2023, we're gonna call that 2024. Like, it's, we're probably not gonna see it next year, at least here in North America. We always get VWs a little bit later than everywhere else. Asia gets it sooner, Europe gets it sooner, so we're probably not getting it for a while.
Because in China, they get the ID6 as well, which is the ID4, except it's hopped up a little bit more and has a third row in the back. So they have more choices. Actually, is this even built in Europe or Germany or anything, or is it built in China?
They revealed it in China.
So. Okay. So it might be a China-built Volkswagen, which is pretty common anyways.
Yeah. And I mean, so WLTP cycle-wise, the ID4 is rated at 480, supposedly. And so this is still significantly higher than that, which is already a respectable car.
Yeah.
This is pretty legit. So if they can meet that price point, let's say 50K Canadian, you know, under 60, I think this will be a pretty compelling car.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is a concept at the moment, but it basically looks production ready other than the headlights and taillights.
Yeah, it is a car they need to make anyways, because hopefully they bring it here. Yeah.
I don't think they will. This is sedan.
It's true. Their Arteon has not done very well. They're killing off the Passat.
The Arteon hasn't done well because of the price point. The CC, when they dropped the price, people did buy them. But Arteon is way too expensive.
Yeah, the car makes no sense.
But the Arteon, you finally get more power, which is nice.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's always been a problem with theirs anyways.
Let's move on. All show, no go.
Let's move on here. Something not that fun, but I mean, it's a new package for the Ford F-150. So if you're in the market for an F-150, the XLT trim, not the Lariat, not the Platinum, or all the other ones that you get, there's a new special edition. It's the Heritage Edition. What you get here is dual tone color scheme, which in my opinion looks kind of cool. You know, red in the middle, black up top,
black at the bottom,
and black on the bottom as well, kind of like a Oreo, I guess.
Oh, it's actually red and carbonized gray, they call it. And these are supposedly Heritage color schemes, which is so you have blue with black, blue with gray, different shade of blue.
Missing that like green that you used to get in the old
green and brown or something.
Yeah.
A lot of pewter back in the day in the 90s. These are going, you know, harkening back to 70s and 80s color schemes. So a little bit more color than the 90s, I guess.
You do get a special interior as well. There's going to be a badge on the center armrest to tell you that it is a Heritage Edition. It'll say Heritage 75. And then you also get different seats. It kind of looks like a plaid seat, which is actually kind of cool. There's no pictures on the media website, but I did find it elsewhere. And it actually looks kind of cool. I don't mind it at all. And I think, you know, if you're looking for an F-150, I mean, unless you're rich beyond your wildest dreams, XLT is the trim to get, because it's
the volume trim.
Yeah, it gets you everything that you really want without stuff that you don't really need. Like, you know, in a F-150, do you really need massaging seats?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. My vote is still the base model Lightning. That work truck Lightning.
But you can't get it unless you're a fleet buyer, unfortunately, for that one, which kind of sucks. But let's move on. Jeep salutes the U.S. military with the special edition Freedom Package for 2023.
Yeah, another low effort trim package special model.
Sorry, was that low or no effort?
A little to no effort trim, you know, similar to the F-150 Heritage. It's just like, it's a very easy thing for manufacturers to throw out there because they don't have to change too much as far as tooling, or they're not that creative with it. But this is basically a trim for the Wrangler and the Gladiator based on the Sport S model. So that's one of the lower trims. It's not a Sahara, not a Rubicon. It's just the base-ish Sport S trim, which actually is not that poorly equipped. And you can option it up with like decent equipment as well.
Right.
It's 3,300 US, military themed. So it's got an Oscar Mike badge, which stands for, or OM, which is on the move. It's a little in military lingo, supposedly. Kind of like OTW is on the way. They have OM. and there's a little US flag. No, it's not even that big. It's just above the Jeep logo on the front fender. And there's going to be, little badges here and there. Standard LED headlights, fog lights, body color fender flares, steel bumper, rock rails, and black painted wheels. Some of that sounds like it was already on the Sport S trim, but
it was, or at least options anyways.
Yeah. Part of that $3,300 package is a $250 donation to military related charities, which kind of interesting. It's like you're paying for them to donate the money, which is kind of one of those like very American things that corporations like to do, is to donate money to get tax incentives. Yeah, so they're charging you so that they can save money on their taxes, which is kind of genius. But also, if you are active or recently retired service member, you do qualify for an additional $500 bonus cash. you know, it's so American to hop into a Jeep or a Dodge or a Ram product if you do serve in the military. It's just one of those things. I find it more so with this company than Ford or GM.
I doubt we'll be getting it.
We won't. Like, we won't get an American flag model. For sure.
I'm pretty sure I've seen some Canadian models with an American flag on it. Like, don't some, like, F-150s have
American flag? I think there's, like, the 1941 or whatever. No. Like a Jeep, like a Willys truck that looks like a old American military Jeep. Yeah. But this one is specifically for 4th of July. It's, you have to order it this month, basically. It's a 1 month special. But yeah, it's like, if you want a Sport S trim, which
might as well,
which and you're going to gonna me get is a like,
few options.
Yeah. But it's kind of boring. Like, I don't know. I think they should have gone over the top with like the red, white, and blue theme or do an army green theme, right? Like they make green versions of these trucks, so why not do it like a green? But the plain white is very like rental spec. Weird.
Yeah. You know what they should do with the new Jurassic Park that's coming out? You know what I'm thinking. You should definitely do one of those.
I mean, they Jurassic did everything Park. Back. They had, what, Call of Duty edition? Like, it's just random. So many special edition Jeeps. This one is a little bit lazy, but manufacturers are kind of... We've seen this a lot this year specifically, amidst the whole supply shortage thing. Yeah, manufacturers are kind of doing these very lazy trims.
Yeah. Moving on, though, more news from Stellantis. The 2023 Grand Cherokee Trailhawk. It's only going to be a 4xe now. So for 2022, you can get a Trailhawk as the with the Pentastar V6, but they're dropping that for 2023. Which is kind of weird, because like the Pentastar is like, you know, the one that's most reliable. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the 4xe isn't, but it's a brand new engine. There has to be problems with it. But it does make good power, like 375 horse, 410 pound-feet, or no, 470 pound-feet. It makes good power. But I don't know. If I'm on the trail, I would rather kind of have a Pentastar just in case, or a Hemi.
Yeah. You know, I looked into the Trailhawk, even a previous generation one, because I was like, you know what, that's a SUV that can tow, it looks cool, it's reasonably nice, I wouldn't be ashamed of driving it. But the problem I had with the Trailhawk was the air suspension, which I'm not a big fan of air suspension in off-road rig. Like, you can technically offer 10.9 inches of ground clearance, which is a lot, but to do so, you're fully aired up. You can't drive around like that, especially on a trail. It's going to be ride terribly. The other issue is if one of these struts or air springs break, which they do, no matter how good quality it is, eventually they will wear down and they will start leaking or something like that. You're collapsed, right? Like, you can't air up your it basically makes it undrivable. You have to be towed off of a trail, which I really, that was my dilemma. The previous generation, a lot of people that do wheel a Trailhawk, I saw a lot of people do the normal steel spring conversion. So you just put in like a normal lift kit with a shock and spring and then just call it a day. You don't get to adjust your height. Like, air suspension is great for a street car, I think, having that that flexibility. But if you're actually like overlanding, I feel like it's there's a reason why a Wrangler doesn't come with air suspension, right?
It just has heavy duty suspension for the Trailhawk.
The what was it? Quadra lift. Yeah, you need Quadra lift to get the 10.9 inches. They call it
Quadra lift. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now with electronic semi-active damping delivers 10.9 inches of ground clearance. Which,
if it's like the old Trailhawk, it was standard to have Quadra lift. Like you could not have it, because then it's not really a Trailhawk, because it can't deliver that almost 11 inches of clearance. And yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me that only fully aired up can you clear these things, because that means if you can't put a big tire on, because guess what, at normal highway height it won't clear. So yeah, that to me is my biggest issue with it. It's great for brochures, it's great for press launches, for people to drive around their trail, but in the real world I couldn't see myself really this being my dedicated off-road rig for camping and whatever. Which the Trailhawk is supposed to be, right? Another thing is the previous generation Trailhawk, you could tow, I think, over 7,000 pounds, because you could get that with the V8. But now with the 4xe, we're limited to 6,000, which is not great. Like, 6,000 is just normal crossover numbers. It's not
I mean, it's still more than your typical crossover, but only by 1,000 pounds, because most crossovers tow like 5,000.
Yeah, 5,000. Like, it's not enough to tow like a really good sized boat or trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely a little weird. But I think they're doing it because of the electrification. They're kind of moving towards that. They want to show that, you know, what's capable. And reducing the amount of trims is actually, you know, in their favor, because it just makes it easier for them to produce.
Exactly. And realistically, people aren't taking a $70,000, $80,000 Grand Cherokee like to that intensive a off-roading trail. And having that added benefit of fuel economy is a plus, I think, for this type of car. I don't know what kind of MPG it's rated at, though. With
56 MPGe.
Which means nothing.
It really doesn't.
Because it depends how much you charge it. You know, some people might be like, I never use any gas because my commute's 6 kilometers.
Yeah.
And I just charge it every day. Yeah. Which I could, technically. My commute is, I walked to work last week, and it's a 10-minute walk. So technically, if I got a 4xe Grand Cherokee, I would not really need to use gas very often.
Or you can just drive right through the center, rather than going on the street, because you have that trail capability.
Mm-hmm. 24 inches of water fording, 47:1 crawl ratio. Yeah.
Stuff that you definitely need for your next trip to the mall. Mm. Moving on from that, we have some news from Acura. So, as you may know, they stopped production of the NSX after the Type S. That was no more. But they still have this PMC, this place that NSX was hand-built. So they're doing a special edition for the TLX called a TLX Type S PMC edition in your red, white, and blue. It's actually kind of a cool color scheme. I like the blue the most. It reminds me of World Rally Blue, especially with those gold wheels. They're not gold, they're copper. They kind of look gold. Interior looks pretty standard, but you just have this white leather. But what you have to know is, I didn't find this information on the Canadian site. So it might be a US exclusive for a Type S PMC edition. They didn't say exactly how many there are going to be produced, but any PMC cars is always going to be quite limited.
Let's see. What is special about the PMC? It's the paint quality or the paint?
It's color? Handcrafted.
Okay.
And hand assembled. Yeah, following the hand assembly process, each TLX Type S PMC receives the same quality control that the NSX does, including dyno check, paint inspection, and rough road simulations. Oh, to protect the paint during shipping, PMC editions are wrapped in a specially designed car cover and transported to Accord dealers via enclosed single car carriers.
Yeah. Like, I'm curious if we could, like, if you ask, like, a technician at Acura, hey, could you tell this car has better QC than a normal TLX? I'm curious if they could find any differences, because it's, you know, in today's day and age, especially with Acura or Honda, and like, you just don't see major quality control issues. We're not talking about, like, oh, if I could buy a Model 3 PMC, I would buy that all day long. It would be $5,000 more, but hey, it's actually tested. Apparently, a lot of Model X's recently have been coming out with defective charge ports. So people take them home, drive them the 300-400K, go to charge it, and they're like, oh, I can't drive. I can't charge it. I can't go anywhere. It just gets towed back to the dealer, and there's a shortage on parts, so they can't even fix it. So that extra QC would have been nice. But that's, I'm really curious, because everything is made and everything, you know, I've taken these cars apart, put them back together, and they don't, there's no real necessity for additional QC, which I don't get what the big deal is.
You know what? I think you're right. So I've driven a lot of vans recently from every manufacturer that has one. Pacifica, Sienna, Odyssey, as well as the Carnival. The only four vans you can buy really here in Canada. And the Odyssey was the only one that didn't squeak and rattle. And a van is the one that will squeak and rattle because it's a big, giant tube. So in terms of rigidity, it's the least in terms of like most vehicles, right? So yeah. I was actually quite surprised.
The thing with the squeaks and rattles is they're manufactured parts. Like, they still come out of the same machine, and it's the same plastic molding making the it's the clips, it's the plastic on plastic that's flexing and squeaking together. Whether or not it's hand assembled versus machine assembled, I don't think it even makes a difference. And actually, that part is probably hand assembled anyways, like all the interior trims. There's probably so little that you can vary, like, because we're talking about, okay, can a human put together something better than a machine? And you're putting together the same parts together.
It depends on what day it is. On a Monday morning or Friday afternoon, I don't think the human can do it better. But what's kind of nice about the PMC products of past, so like they had the RDX, two generations of it, as well as they had a, I think they had a TLX before as well. They weren't much more than the regular models. So that was one of the things, right? You're not paying much more. I think it was like $1,000 or $2,000 more. And that was like for the RDX one, so like the orange one that your neighbor has, or the blue one that was released last year. So you're not paying much more for that extra QC and having something that's special. It's kind of not bad.
It's one of those things that's like, to the owner, it's the coolest thing ever, and to anyone he tells, they're like, they could give less of a crap.
Yeah, it's like, like, oh, okay, cool. All right, it's just a TL. All right, have fun. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on from that. Let's talk a little bit about U.S. sales figures.
Yeah, so, I mean, because it was kind of a slower news week, we're not seeing any major releases, because now we're at that halfway point through the year where everyone is, now releasing all the 2023 model year cars that we've been talking about the last 6 months. So everyone's released now their Q2 figures. We're talking about, you know, obviously the whole industry is in the red. Like overall, the market is in the red because we're down. Last year to date, US sold 8.08 million cars. This year we're at 6.6. So it's a fair bit down. And so most manufacturers are maybe 15 to 30% lower than last year. There are some anomalies, but there's also some cars that some manufacturers that struggle. I'm going to leave out the really small manufacturers like Fiat. They don't really sell many cars. Alfa Romeo, they don't sell many cars. Lucid, they weren't around last year. But like Acura and Honda, Acura's down 48%. We just talked about Acura. What products they have? They have the Integra on the way. I don't know if their deliveries are happening yet.
Not yet.
So that's a bit of a slump for them. Honda though is also down 39%. So both of these manufacturers are significantly lower, and they're lower than the industry average, right? The whole industry dropped, but them specifically dropped more. Nissan and Infiniti, same thing. Infiniti's down 41%, Nissan's down 34%. So pretty tough times over there. If you're working in those sales departments, it's stretching pretty thin. But I'm curious, like, you know, Nissan's got some new products, so maybe they just, I saw Honda's press release, they're just like, you know, it's supply issues, we just can't make them. It's not necessarily people don't want these cars, they just don't have cars to fulfill the orders, because it's not like dealer lots are filled with a surplus of inventory, right? They just bad forecasting, bad supply chain management perhaps. So just because their numbers are down does not necessarily mean people don't want the cars. Doesn't mean they're bad cars. It just means their numbers are down. Like, VW and Audi both down 30%.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised. Like, Infiniti's down 41%. That's actually quite a lot. Buick, 57?
Yeah, Buick. Some of these secondary manufacturers, I'm surprised too, because I'm like, how high demand were Buicks that you couldn't keep up with production, right?
Maybe they're like, well, we don't have to keep up with production. We always have plenty in stock.
Yeah, but I guess some of the bigger news is that Tesla's market share has grown significantly. So Tesla is one of the few that are in the green, and they're very in the green. They're up 102% from last year. Last year to date, they only sold 139,000 cars. This year, they're at 282. So they've ramped up production big time. Elon is he's kind of in a mood right now, it seems. So their morale is not great at Tesla, but they're pushing hard. From what I've heard is... they're
chasing actually like one of the really two manufacturers that's actually grown. The other one's Genesis at 33%.
And I want to, you know, take a moment, and it's not just that they've grown 100% since last year. You got to keep in mind, they're now in line with mainstream manufacturers. They're building and selling as many cars as Nissan, Kia, Ram, Subaru, Hyundai. They're up there. Like these, that's insane, right? Like that, you know, I know this is their domestic market. So, you know, Hyundai globally still makes a lot more cars, but still in America, which is one of the biggest car markets out there, Tesla's is rivaling a lot of these mainstream manufacturers. They're no longer that boutique company.
Right.
And they've got a smaller dealer network than a lot of these established brands, I would say.
Yeah. Don't even really have a dealer network. It's just every here and there, they just have a store that you can't you can buy a car from.
Yeah, Toyota's still number one, and they're only down 18.6%, which is, I think, better than the overall industry.
Oh yeah. Okay. I know Ford is close. Ford is a very close second, about 20,000 units behind.
Yeah, actually, that's like all Mach-E's and F-150s.
Yeah.
Because what else is there? Oh, Broncos. But that's not a high-volume car.
No. Not even Bronco Sport.
But I think, well, Ford did not drop as much. Ford only dropped 8%.
8%, yeah.
So they've gained market share on Toyota, if you think about it. And I'm not surprised, because they released their big product, which is the F-150. What was it, late last year? Or early this year, and they probably knew that, hey, this is going to be a popular car. We've got to figure out how to keep building these. Right. You know, everyone saw the slump coming, but how well did people prepare for it? That's really, you know, what separates the manufacturers that are successful and those that aren't.
How did Fiat sell 592 cars?
I don't even know what they still make here or what they still sell in North America. Promasters?
No, Promasters are under Ram. Yeah, that's under Ram. The only thing, I thought the 500X was the only car available.
Yeah, they have the 500X, and I guess they sold 500 of them.
Yeah, on their site, Fiat 500Xs, that's it. And it's a 2021 model.
Oh, but it still counts. If they sold it this year, it still counts.
Right.
And they sold less than 600 of those. Which, why did you buy one? But I guess there was nothing else for sale anywhere. So kudos to Fiat for still existing in North America.
All right. Don't get me wrong, but Fiat 500X, not a bad looking car. Like,
oh, yeah. No. It's not a bad design.
Sweet.
It just don't.
There are better ways to spend $30,000. But
sweet.
It's not a bad looking car at all.
It's not. I like the Jeep better.
Renegade. But this has kind of more charm on the front. It looks like a little Fiat 500.
It does. It's such a weird choice, but I get it. And you know what? There's so much going on. People will buy these for probably like Turo and just rent them out. Like, it's maybe not a personal choice, but hey, it's available. I've got to run my rental business. I'll buy a 500X.
The top trim is called Yacht Club.
No one who's ever had a Yacht Club membership is buying a 500X. I can guarantee you that.
All right, I'm just curious. 500X. If I finance estimated is $431 for 72 months.
You can buy a real car for that. Oh, finance.
Finance. Let's do lease with zero down. Oh, I can't even calculate. Yeah. And the US site kind of just sucks. Oh, lease information is not currently available for this model.
They probably don't want to calculate it, because there's just no, the volume is so low that it's not worth leasing.
Well, $30,000. I don't know. It's a sweet looking car. Anyways.
You can buy so many legitimate cars. Like, who goes and like, hey, I don't want a Crosstrek. I don't want a Corolla Cross. I don't want, there's just so many infinite names of cars, and this is like literally bottom of the list car. And
yeah, but for somehow, $30,000, you can't get a good HRV.
No. You can't get a good HRV, period. They all suck. If you've been following Kicking Tires. Yeah. The Honda did mention they got a lot of pre-orders for the HRV. But
actually, you know what? I've been following people's like talking about the HRV, the reviews, because like there's in the US there's been the press release and as well as the press drive. Mm-hmm. People are like really positive on it and said they fixed all the biggest problems of like the space, and the only thing that they didn't fix was the speed. I didn't think the space was really the biggest issue, because if you want a bigger HRV, you buy a CRV. That's what you would do. Doesn't make sense for you to stick with an HRV. The HRV was designed as a small vehicle, and now it's much bigger than it ever was. So like, it's not that compact vehicle that you park anywhere anymore. I don't know. Anyways, can't keep ranting about that. Last thing that we can talk about here is the review this week. The Kia EV6 GT, according to me, the N-Line package, because for whatever reason, I kept saying that in my video review of it. I have no idea why I kept saying that.
Yeah, it's you just mix up Hyundai and Kia. And
I do.
I mean, everyone does.
They're the same thing. But the EV6 is the all-wheel drive long range with GT Line Package 2. It's a stupid name. Why is it so long? Because it's a package, not a trim, so that they can get the government incentive. That's really what it is. Good EV overall for two people. Putting people in the back? No. That roofline, how it cuts down?
Yeah.
It's so terrible. Like anyone of height going into that, you have to duck to get in. Mm-hmm. It's just not convenient.
Yeah, and I was really surprised when I saw that car. Just because I knew it was related to the Ioniq. And I was just like, wait, where did all the practicality and space go?
Yeah.
It's just trade-off for styling, I guess. But
it's 100% trade-off for styling. And the wheelbase is shorter on this, so you lose out on rear leg space as well.
Is the battery any space smaller?
Nope, battery same size.
Does it drive any different?
It does. Okay. It does. The tuning in the EV6 is definitely more sporty. Like, if you push this, even with traction control on in sport mode, you can get the back end to kind of come out. Whereas in the Ioniq 5, it just felt planted. It's just
rolly, though.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I had a sense that the Ioniq was very boaty.
It's so definitely curious softer.
If the EV6 is... is more taut, yeah.
It definitely is, but it's not so much more that like it's a performance vehicle by any means. The full GT that's going to be coming out, that's going to be your performance package, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be the car that you want if you're looking for something that's more actual sportiness of it, because that one has like 500 horsepower or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that you actually want. But I didn't mind it. For the way that it drove, but it's really a two-person SUV, which then goes back to, you know, why are you buying this kind of bigger SUV?
Yeah, well, I mean, the price point makes sense for the range and type of car you're getting. You can save a decent amount of money of this compared to, you know, I don't know what even you might even compare to.
Ford Mach-E. Because I have the Mach-E right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. The price point is great.
I really like the Mach-E and how it drives. I understand it now.
I like it too. Because I drove it. I'm like, this just drives so intuitively.
Yeah.
It's the only way. I can't say, oh, it's amazingly sport. Wait, the one you have, is it the sport model? Like the?
Yeah, it's a full fat GT.
Oh, okay. I've driven the regular one. And I've like, you know what? This thing drives really nice, and it drives exactly how I want it to drive. And there's nothing more I can say about it. The Ioniq, to me, was very disappointing to drive. Still a car that I would totally spend my own money and get, but it sucks to drive. If you care about how a car drives, the Ioniq does not drive
very well. It's not the one. Yeah. It's not the vehicle that you want because of the driving experience. You're buying it because of all the quirks that it has on it. That's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally wouldn't get the GT for the Mach-E. I don't think it's like worth
80 grand.
90. I wouldn't pay that much for it.
Model Y performance money.
Model Y performance is a little bit more, like $1,000 more.
Yeah.
But like the Mach-E all-wheel drive with the big battery is 78. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. 78. Bionic 5 is 60. $18,000 more. It's such a hard, you know, upgrade. But like the rear seat room in the Mach-E is surprisingly good. Roofline is just as crappy as the Kia. But at least, like, if you ever sat in any EV in the back seat, you know what I'm talking about. Your knees are just way up into your chest. Maybe like not that high, but it just feels a lot higher than a standard car because of the battery layout, right? The Mach-E doesn't feel like that. And in the GT that I'm driving right now, I don't feel like it's an SUV. It's not sitting super high either. So I don't know like how they're packaging it, but you know, the way that they are doing it, it's very, very well done.
And it's kind of unique. Like, it's kind of
nice. The looks of it car. It definitely looks good. It definitely does look good.
It turns heads. It's one of those cars that I don't think it photographs well, but in person it looks natural and like it's not bad.
The one I have right now is cyber orange. So it doesn't help. Bright orange. So it's definitely getting a lot of attention, but you know, I floor it. And I disappeared. I don't run over anyone because it's all-wheel drive. I don't have to worry about, you know, a fish telling out.
Traditional Mustang problems.
Yeah. Actually, in unbridled mode, there's an unbridled extend, I think that's called. But an unbridled, like, I took a corner a little bit faster, back end does step. Even with traction control on, back end does step up. It feels like a performance vehicle. Mm-hmm. And that's what
I've heard.
Yeah, and definitely it's just feels great. Dude, I do like the Mach-E. But the EV6, I don't know. If you're a styling over substance kind of person, sure.
How about EV6 versus like an ID4?
I mean, an ID4... is, I would say ID4 is more Ioniq, right? It's more that same line. It's just a car.
Because the ID4 is a lot smaller than an Ioniq. It's got a practical use of space, but yeah. It doesn't feel as big as the Ioniq.
No.
Like the back seat is smaller, but I and can the fit there. Like,
and the Ioniq is it's quite a bit faster as well. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw quite a few EV6 on the road when I was down in Portland last week. Actually, yeah, people like this car, but and it does like it's actually really long too.
Like that's it just looks long.
It yeah, the styling wise, I think it's all wheelbase because all battery.
It is. Yeah,
that's why it feels long is because you get so much wheelbase. But it's okay. I don't know. I don't think it would be my first choice for definitely a not. 50, 60 grand EV.
I think it's 62. Yeah, 62 for the top trim. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, the top trim gets you that a sunroof, heads up display, and a better audio system. If you step down, it's $4,000 less, but there's no sunroof. 58 grand, no sunroof, just feels a little off to me. And because of the lower roof line and higher belt line, you get small windows, so you get it feels pretty claustrophobic inside if you have the sunroof closed. So at 58, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing is the EV6 in terms of practical, it's a big car. But in terms of practical use of space, it's not there.
No.
Whereas something maybe like a BZ4X, which is a smaller class, I think, maybe if it has good use of space, it can rival this for interior volume.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a car that it's going to sell itself.
The only thing it can't do is drift, because I've seen people take their EV6 and actually drift it, the rear wheel drive version, because it's powerful enough that goes to the rear wheels and it can actually go sideways with these. Whereas the BZ4X is front wheel drive based, or biased, I should say. So you're not really getting that. Anyways, that's really it for this week. Anything else?
Nope.
Should be good. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week to talk about more automotive news. Hopefully there's some more exciting stuff coming up. But yeah, we'll see you then.